Welcome to The Sync Report, the intersection between filmmakers, content creators, and musicians, where we host a weekly conversation with some of the biggest names in film, television, music, and entertainment. Meet industry experts and top-level musicians as we pull the curtain back on music placement and scores, building vital relationships and providing real opportunities for our listeners. Listen to indie filmmakers and content creators present their latest productions and describe specific scenes as they consider music submitted by our audience. Hosted by film star and musician Colin O'Donoghue and his co-host, the godmother of independent films, Rose Ganguza, and The Sync Report's creator and music supervisor, Jason P. Rothberg. Don't forget, tell your friends about us and remember to rate, comment, and subscribe to The Sync Report on Apple and across all platforms. Music is the difference between a good film and a great one.
Okay, so I am actually getting extra money for saying that, yeah?
Money? No problem, Alfredo. Grab your balaclava, a big bag, and I'll meet you at your local bank at noon.
Welcome to The Sync Report.
Thank you, Milfredo and Willow, for that lovely introduction. And welcome to The Sync Report.
Wow, welcome to The Sync Report. An amazing show ahead. And of course, I have the most amazing host and partner, Rose Ganguza. How are you tonight?
Oh, hey, Jace. It's so nice speaking to you.
Always lovely to hear your voice. How's New York?
New York is beautiful, actually. We're having just gorgeous days, but Indian summer.
Are the leaves turning?
Not yet, no. It's been too warm for the leaves to turn.
That's scary. But we won't go down that road.
Yeah, we're waiting for the Halloween parade here in Greenwich Village, so.
Oh, wow. Where are you going to be this year, Rose?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just getting the kids all dressed up, so.
Oh, you must dress as dinosaurs. Something.
Baby dinosaurs. Yeah.
Oh, how cute. Oh, I love it. Amazing. Yeah. And what a show, Rose, you put together tonight. Oh, my God. We have Reeve Carney on the show.
I mean, Reeve is the best.
The best. I'm so looking forward to that conversation.
Oh, I just want to hear how he managed to just stay the coolest between music and film. He couldn't do it years ago. And he's going to tell us exactly how he did it.
Milfredo 7, you're going to love this interview. This guy is the coolest.
I can't wait to hear how he handles it all, how he juggles all three. I mean, does he compartmentalize it? Does he just have it all in an amalgamation? I mean, he is such a multi-hyphenated. I want to hear about that.
I mean, and he does it with such grace, honestly. I mean, I'm looking forward to the interview, but just like the correspondence we've had with him, he just seems so lovely. It's just going to be such a great interview. Oh, how exciting. Milfredo, how's life going? What's happening? Are you off the festival run?
Yeah, but the winter run starts soon. We've just got booked for the Big Shine Festival, which kicks it all off in November. That's Happy Mondays, Black Grape, Cast, Reef. Yeah. It's just like a 90s fest it is. So
all your homies.
Absolutely. Loads of 40-somethings with bucket hats and shout-out trainers on, just thinking they're reliving their youth.
Unbelievable. What a show. I wish I was going to be there with you on that one.
Well, I can get your tickets, mate. Don't shy away.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm coming.
No excuse
coming.
Now.
How long are we off the bike for?
Oh, man, about another 3 weeks for sure. I've shaved a little bit of bone off my hip, apparently. Yeah, it's just floating around in there, but it's all part and parcel. No sense, no feeling, Jace.
Unbelievable. Of course, I'm a rock star and I'm going to go out there and be an extreme sporting figure as well. Incredible.
I know you actually get my kicks from somewhere.
Yeah, this is incredible. What a show. Kevin, I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, these interviews are ending up to be like an hour and a half long and you have to put it into a 22-minute episode. Are you struggling with that? I know you're working on Charlotte Church's show at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte's was very, very difficult, but since we're going to have this podcast, that will cut it down just a little bit more, and then I'll take it from there. So, I mean, it is incredible content, but, we have a great team.
And now let's bring up my music supervisor, Jess. Jess Rodriguez.
Hello, 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 hello.
Another incredibly talented musician. You have a new single out. I see it's getting incredible response.
Yeah, actually, that was kind of unexpected. I, you know, sometimes log out of those little, the Spotify thing and log back in and look at that. You know, it's always exciting.
People are loving it. It's incredible. What's the name?
Oh, My Own Way. Yeah. They actually played it in my gym today and completely embarrassed me. I was like, what's happening? I cannot focus.
Oh, I love that. How beautiful. That's great. We're going to have to play it on the show. I don't know why.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Why it's not been submitted to my music supervisor is very bizarre.
She's so busy.
She's so busy. I know. I drive her mental. Well, look, Jess, tell us what you're busy working on. What kind of opportunities can our audience tap into? And where can they send their music?
Okay, so we have a couple ongoing opportunities, one that we're trying to kind of close out, but I'll list that one first. We are working with Deborah Richards. She's a four-time Emmy Award winner, and she's working on the film Move Me No Mountain, and we're trying to find 90s grunge tracks for her, and we have a lot already that we're kind of working through. So
some good ones, actually, really good ones.
Yep. I'll mention the opportunity first, and then I'll mention where to send the song. So the last ongoing opportunity is for us, you know, yours truly, I suppose, this show, the Sync Report podcast and the TV show we are developing. So music for sort of the sound bed of that. It doesn't have to be only instrumental. Please just send one song and your best song. The genre is open. So this is kind of your chance to just show what you do.
And we've actually had some incredible songs. Milfredo and Kevin have been giving some incredible feedback.
Yeah, the bag is full. It's just like every time I listen to something, I want to say no. And it's just like, oh, God. This has got to go
I know.
As
there's
well.
A lot in there. I know.
Honestly, I thought you were going soft, you guys, you know, because how could every song be so good? And as I'm listening back, these songs are really good.
Yeah, we got a lot of great talent listening to the show and involved with us. So
I think Simon Cowell would be jealous of.
Oh, definitely, most definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't wait to play that one song from what's his name, Eric something with the Ola Ola that was inspired by
the mamas and the papas and the da da da. Yeah,
oh yeah. I love that song.
He became my instant best friend. I love that guy.
I love him. I love all these guys. They're such characters, incredible talent. All right. Well, if you want to submit music for any of these syncs, you have to send it to our email. That's tsrsyncs@gmail.com. tsrsyncs@gmail.com.
And if you could send ideally a streamable link with the option to download. I've had some people send me that, you know, I cannot download the song. So I'm like, I love it, but I can't do anything with this. So please let me download the song. If it's an MP3, that's fine too. But I would love some sort of website, maybe Disco or Box or something that has the metadata already in there. So we know who to contact when we want to say, yes, we love your song. And for future briefs, I will be sending out the link to our team Disco that you can upload directly to our Disco if you are a Disco user.
That is brilliant. Oh my God. I hope everybody listening submits. Don't forget, every Sunday is a listening session on Clubhouse. So submit your music, join us in Clubhouse, and see what Milfredo and Kevin think of your tracks. We did have to bring in a third character into the judging thing for the TV series, though, because we needed a bit of reality. So we have a drone robot that we programmed with AI and ML. Look at me, Kev, with all these cool DIY terms.
Yes, yes.
You're down with the kids, Jason. You are.
Oh, man. I am so dope. I'm off the chain. I'm going nuts. But yeah, the drone will actually be judging music too. And I think my drone, Twiggy, will have something to say about every song played.
Twiggy.
I'm looking forward to it all. So exciting. Jess, you're incredible. Thank you.
Thank you.
I got to bring up to the mic just actually somebody who's joined the team in the last few weeks. Her music totally has impressed us. This is a woman that can deliver music in every genre, and every genre is as good as the next. Lisa Dunn, say hello.
Hello.
Lisa, I don't know what I would do without you. I honestly, it's funny because as we were staffing up and just made that decision to make sure everybody on the staff was a songwriter, you know, I was like, great, this is going to give me more work. You know, I'm going to actually end up having to clean up. But honestly, that's not the case with anyone on the staff and crew and cast. And really, you have brought that to such a new level. You came in as a researcher. You are now our script writer. You're joining me on the pre-interviews. And we had a really special, special pre-interview conversation with Susie Quantro. Was that your first one? That was your... John Ayers was your first.
Second one, yes. John Ayers was the first. In fact, they've been amazing interviews. But Susie was extra special because she came out with something quite personal that I was not expecting.
The most amazing moment. Lisa, tell us this story.
Yeah. So, you know, I basically had told her how much I admire her for what her career has been for women in music.
The first woman to front a rock band, the first.
And, you know, that I brought up the fact that I am a singer-songwriter as well. And the conversation went on for a few minutes, but she kind of interrupted and said, I have to tell you something that's a little strange, but I feel I need to get this off my chest. It's been kind of mulling in my brain and, you know, I need to get it out. And she said, I have a bit of like instinctual energy or a psychic type of ability. And she says, I don't normally talk about it, but you need to write a song for your dad. And I instantly burst into tears because I just lost my dad in July, and I had written a song to him for how grateful I was that he was my father that week that he went into the hospital and passed. And he heard that song on a voice memo, one of the last songs he heard before he passed away. And I since had gotten it produced, and it is going, I decided at that point that I wanted to make an EP for my family. And so there's a few songs for my dad going on that. And that's one of them. And it's played at a celebration in September. So that was just a really,
I mean, it was incredible.
Wow. Moving.
Right. Milfredo, can you believe this?
Oh, like,
we're in the middle. We're talking to Susie Quattro, right? Is in the middle. And we're talking about all these amazing things, you know, from the Stooges to Alice Cooper, you know, cover of Rolling Stone. And she literally stops herself and says, Lisa, I'm sorry. I have to say something. And it's like, and in the end, she told us, she's like, I knew this was going to really affect you. I knew you were going to cry, but you know, this
and
visual.
And it was just
this,
on point, the fact of it, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
you can't just pluck
just
that out anyway. Yeah.
It was just shocking because of course she has no connection to me. No, she wouldn't have known I was even coming, you know, to like look me up or anything. So the fact that she was so precise around
tapped in.
Her, yeah. I mean, I was just blown away. And
wow,
she has since described what she saw in terms of his stature and what she felt when she listened to the song that I sent her. And she's dead on. She described him to a T.
So isn't that crazy?
Very, very crazy. But I'm eternally grateful to her for that discussion. And,
well, yeah, and you know he's listening now, don't you? Do you know what I mean? It's just like,
absolutely. And I mean, she's just an amazing person, and so to have this discussion about her career and her all the things she's done,
but all the things that have come together, like you being on that show, you know, and just recently joining and it being her and her having this gift, you know, it's just meant to be, wasn't it? It was meant
really
to be.
I really feel that way. I really, really feel that way. Yes, absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Meanless to say, it's cemented Lisa's position. I don't think I don't need another sign. That came from God himself or whatever you may believe in. That was incredibly, it was spiritual. It was cosmic. It was human at its best form. It was brilliant. So welcome, Lisa. Keep doing what you're doing.
And I just wanted to add to Jess's note about submitting to the disco link that she's going to be putting into the email list for people that are asking for the briefs, is that you do not have to be a disco user in order to submit to the disco link. You just can drag and drop into that link, even if it's a Dropbox or a box link. But we really do ask that if you can try to put the metadata in the file before you...
Yes, please make sure we know who you are, the song title, give us the information. Even the lyrics are very helpful.
Yes,
so
please.
Yeah, we've stepped up our game here at the Sync Report. We have our own disco account. Ooh la la. I love it. Lisa, thank you for everything you're doing. Absolutely incredible.
All right. I'm loving this show and I'm loving this team. And it's such a family of great people. And yeah, I can't wait to kind of keep going with this. This is amazing.
Thank you, Lisa, on every front. The great Paula Flack. I just want to make sure everybody knows our social media. Is there any important things that we should be sharing?
Yes, don't forget to follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and we will be putting the podcasts up on all your favorite podcasting platforms.
Oh, so exciting.
As well as on YouTube, where we will be transcribing the show to ensure it's accessible for everybody.
Ooh, for the hearing impaired as well. I love that. Very thoughtful. The great Paula Flack, she does everything for this show, pretty much everything. Wow, and this is why she's our new producer, no longer just in charge of marketing and everything else that you've been doing, talent coordination and putting up with my droniness. Paula, you're amazing. Thank you so much for everything that you contribute.
Oh, thank you. I love it.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jace.
Hey, Jason. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Just buried in paperwork.
Oh, for the Sync Report.
Not this time. Move me no mountain.
That indie film your music supervising?
Yeah.
Sounds like a great project. What's the problem?
It's a brilliant film, and we're building a great soundtrack, but you can't imagine how much paperwork I deal with for these films.
Have you heard of Sync Lodge?
First, you got to draft up the sync request forms.
I've heard of Sync Lodge.
Then drafting and issuing contracts.
Yep, Sync Lodge is great, Paula. It does everything a music supervisor needs.
Then deliver the cue sheet. It never ends.
Doesn't Sync Lodge do all of that automatically?
Sweat Lodge? What are you guys banging on about? I got real issues I'm sharing with you guys.
Yeah, lots of issues.
We're trying to tell you, Jason. Sync Lodge is a new platform for music supervisors. It helps you to source the music, sync songs against scenes, draft up sync requests, and even creates the cue sheets once you've locked in the music to the film.
Oh, Sync Lodge does all that?
It's true, Jason. I just started using it for the sync report, and it's not only saving time, but it's so easy to use, I'm actually enjoying the work.
You guys are the best. Sync Lodge sounds amazing and exactly what I need for music supervising. Why am I always the last one to hear about these things?
I've been telling you about Sync Lodge for weeks.
Don't feel bad, Edge, for not telling me sooner. I know you're busy. You're a good guy.
Paula, is my mic on? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Edge.
Guys, what's the name of that program again?
Sync Lodge.
That is something to scream about. Yes, you too can be cool like Edge and use cutting-edge technology to help you with your film and TV productions. No matter if you're a music supervisor, director, producer, editor, save time and increase proficiency with Sync Lodge.
I need to find a new gig.
So grab a drink. Let's have a conversation about music and sync. Oh,
well, an amazing show we have lined up tonight on the Sync Report. We're outdoing ourselves. Every show is getting better. Who's on the hot seat tonight, Paula?
Oh, Jason, it's a real special one this week. We have Reeve Carney on the show.
Oh, my God.
It's very exciting. New York-based Reeve Carney is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and actor who is best known for his performance on Broadway as Peter Parker, a.k.a. Spider-Man, in Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which he played for 3 years. You can still see Reeve on Broadway performing the role of Orpheus in the Tony Award-winning musical Hadestown, which he has been in since 2017. Before Reeve was on Broadway, he had already appeared on the big screen, including in the role of the young Ishmael Chambers in the film Snow Falling on Cedars, where he won Best Performance in a Feature Film at the Young Artists Awards 2000. He had played guitar professionally at B.B. King's nightclub in Los Angeles. Reeve had also been signed to Interscope Records with his jazz-infused rock band called Carney, touring with the Veronicas and opening for Arcade Fire and U2 on the final date of U2's 360 tour.
Massive.
Our British listeners are most likely to recognize Reeve from his role as Dorian Gray in the TV show Penny Dreadful.
Yes.
Amazing. Or as Riff Raff in the Fox musical film The Rocky Horror Picture Show, Let's Do the Time Warp Again, for which he recorded three songs for the soundtrack.
Yep.
Theatre critics and audiences clearly love him, as they have nominated him for several awards, including for Favourite Leading Actor in a Musical. Reeve won Best Musical Theatre Album in 2020, and now get ready to see him acting alongside none other than Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Jared Leto, and other stars as he plays real-life fashion legend Tom Ford in House of Gucci.
I cannot wait to see this.
Not only that, but he launched his own company in lockdown, building electronic effects pedals for musicians, himself included, and he's about to start filming a biopic of Jeff Buckley. Let's give a warm welcome to Reeve Carney.
Unbelievable. He is so truly gifted, this individual on today's show. Reeve Carney, musician, star of stage and screen, overall beautiful human being. I can't wait to get this conversation started. But before we say hello to Reeve, why don't we welcome him with something that might bring some warm fuzzies? Milfredo, let's hear Don't Forget to Say I Love You.
Don't forget to say I love you every time you go, because you never know how much is left. If I forgot to say I love you, how I would regret that you never knew how much I did. Time respects no person. You can't come somehow with your plans. So don't forget to say I love you every time you go, because you never know how much is left. Time respects no person. You can't concern her with your plans. So don't forget to say I love you every time you go, because you never know how much is left.
Oh, so beautiful, so talented. Reeve Carney, welcome to the Sync Report. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you guys so much. Oh, man, it's so awesome. Thank you for the introduction. It's very, very kind of you guys.
And well earned, actually. That's all your credits, man. I mean, and again, just the fact that you're making time for us today, I don't know how you do it.
Well, I know you guys are great people because you're friends with Rose, so...
I was going to say, I know you're friends with Rose. That's how we have you on the show today. And I know she has amazing questions and memories to share and talk about with you. So we're starting off on a very strong foot. But before we get into all the great success and huge projects that you've done, I'd like to start because you're kind of like a New York guy now, correct?
The most formative years, I was raised in New York City.
Oh, you were?
That's actually where I met Rose Ganguza, in New York. But I was bi-coastal by the age of 10. So my brother was he was cast as one of the leads on a TV show with Harry Anderson called Dave's World in the early 90s. And so we ended up moving to L.A. between the years of 93 and 97, in which we were bi-coastal those years. And then eventually by 97, I was fully in L.A.
Did you find even at that age that, you know, was it a big difference between L.A. and New York? Were you happy in California?
Yeah, oddly enough, the first thing I remember really disliking was something I grew to love very much, which was a town called Burbank.
And
the reason I say that is that the buildings were so low and I just didn't like, it was really uncomfortable for me to be walking around like, where are the buildings? So but now I spent actually my teenage years, great majority of them were spent having a lot of fun in Burbank, which sounds kind of strange, but there's quite a lot to do there.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense. There's so much film and TV production there. So, of course, you know, that would be a hub for you. And, you know, obviously, you know, you're growing up, your family is, you know, iconic, full stop. So I'm wondering, focusing on music in this section of the interview, what was it like growing up, even before you got to Los Angeles? Was there music in the house constantly? Was it film? Were you going to theater? What was it like being pre-high school?
Yeah, well, my parents actually met at a club that at the time, for a brief moment, was called The Other End. It's now known and has been known for 50 years as The Bitter End. But at the time, they had The Bitter End and The Other End. They were two separate places. They met on The Bitter End side, which was then called The Other End. So we were very much, it was a part of our life from, yeah, I mean, it really feels like, I mean, working on Broadway, you work with the IATSE union, you know, very closely. And that's a very...
Very much in the news right now.
Oh, yeah, very much. Yeah. It's like a family business a lot of times, just like most businesses are. And for me, music was that. It was like, oh, well, that's just kind of what we're going to do because the family does it. And it just made sense.
So when did you actually pick up the guitar? When did you start playing music?
Actually, piano was my first instrument, but I didn't fall in love with it to the degree that I did the guitar. So... Although now I have, but still guitar is my main first love. But I started playing piano when I was 4, like dabbling, kind of. Wow. I'm not like Mozart or anything like that, but, you know, like just kind of messing around. Then at 12, just before 12, like it was Christmas when I was 11 is when I picked up a guitar and then got a guitar as a gift for the first time, actually.
So when you're 4 years old, sitting at the piano, was that your choice or were your parents kind of motivating you to learn an instrument?
Yeah, before then, they had me on their lap on the piano. So I think I was drawn to it because of that. And prior to that, I think what I wanted to play first was the drums. So that was actually when I was around 2 years old, I asked my parents for a drum kit. And they, I don't know if I said it with words or just pointed at something. I'm not really sure, but that's what they told me. And they bought me like a play drum set. And then, then piano. And then, but guitar was the one that I, you know, I went to university for guitar. And that was my like, real passion and has been.
So before you went to university though, you were at the Academy of Music at Alexander Hamilton.
Exactly.
So what was it like going to a music high school? Was this like a FAME kind of school?
Yeah, it was very much. And actually because of the bi-coastal nature of my life at the time, I actually had auditioned and actually got into LaGuardia here in New York. Music and Art was what it used to be called when it was the FAME school. So I was actually in between those two schools. And thankfully, my family decided to move to Los Angeles full time because I think Hamilton Academy of Music was a much more full spectrum musical education because they weren't, it was very jazz centric, which for me was really, really cool since I had fallen in love with the blues at that point. And I think LaGuardia would have been a bit more classically oriented.
And you can hear that in Carney and your solo projects, you hear blues and jazz and so many incredible influences. And we're going to be playing some clips of that. But I'm going to play a quick clip, which a little bird told me might have been inspirational in you wanting to become a professional musician. Cool. Milfredo, can we hear that Billy Joel track, please?
Left to right, what else could I do?
Reeve, tell me the first time you hear this song, what goes on in your mind?
Oh man, I remember exactly where I was. What a brilliant song and production. I was in the back seat of my parents' 1987 Chevy Suburban, and this came on the radio. And we were driving in Connecticut near actually my uncle Art's house. We were heading, I think, to a family gathering, and I heard that. But this would have been like, I was probably 8 years old at the time. So this would have been probably 91. And I was just, I'd never heard anything like that before with that sort of vocal stack. I mean, obviously harmonies. It existed. Yeah, but also with the clarity with which that's recorded,
yeah,
it wasn't, although that stuff existed prior to that, and I love old group harmonies from the 50s and the 40s and even like earlier than that. But this, I don't know, it just really blew my mind. And then that kind of, I think, led me into Queen. And I don't even think I was particularly aware of the extent of the Beatles catalog at that point either. I mean, I was only 8 years old, so it wasn't really, although it was in the house. So this was the first thing that was my introduction to that sort of harmony, even though oddly enough, Billy Joel is so influenced by Paul McCartney. And I was aware of Billy Joel first, I think.
Well, naturally with your age, you know, being East Coast, I think that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course you would have been 8 years old. You would have been so young when that came out. So that obviously that's pre-high school. Then you end up going to USC, continuing your music studies in jazz.
I majored in studio jazz guitar at the University of Southern California Thornton School of Music. I only ended up going for 1 year, although technically I'm on a 19-year leave of absence. So I don't know, maybe I can still go back.
You're welcome back anytime, I'm sure.
That would be great.
And so was it in school? You must have had a really close relationship with your brother, because your first band, the Carnies, that this is you and your brother. Is it two other friends, John and Adrian? Did you meet them in school?
Yeah, John Epcar and Aiden Moore, we met in school. John and I met when we were 10 years old, and we became fast friends because we both had very famous relatives, and people would never believe us when we would tell them. But I'm related to Thomas Jefferson, and Jonathan is related to Calvin Klein. And so,
oh my God, incredible.
Because we would told each other that and believed each other, I think it formed an instant bond. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the bond is so clear. Music, and I think I love that early stuff almost the most. In fact, let's give our listeners a little taste of The Looking Glass.
Oh, sure.
He's proud of what he's done, of whom he's become, too proud to care. He stares into his own eyes, still don't recognize he's alone again, hanging around like the nose on a clown. He's ashamed to be found.
God, I love your voice, Reeve. Incredible.
Thanks so much.
So is Looking Glass kind of, was that release what got you in front of Interscope?
That particular recording that you have is from Youth Is Wasted, which I ended up redoing later, but I'll get you, for your own interest, the other one too, because it's not available digitally.
Oh, I would love that.
That was from 2004. I wrote that particular song that year, and I changed a few lyrics for the version that you have there. It was more the live performances that got Interscope interested, and we were playing at a club called Molly Malone's.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of our Irish connection, and we played there probably, honestly,
I was gonna say, it's tiny, that place. Yeah.
It holds like 180 people, but it was really amazing and such a special time, because we really built sort of a buzz from the ground up just playing there every week, and we sold it out like probably 75 times, because we were playing every Monday. It was really awesome, and that's what I think, whenever you can generate an audience without the help of the label, they're, you know, just, they're business people. So they're interested, yeah, in that. And I get it. I mean, it makes sense. And luckily that we had that interest from them and from a few other labels at the time. But it was really a fun time because, yeah, you'd see, you know, 1 week Rick Rubin would be there, and then Jimmy Iovine was there the next week. And it was crazy. It was really, really special and cool.
Oh, that is so cool. I could just picture behind the scenes Rick calling up Jimmy going, oh my God, you got to go check these guys out. Awesome. What a buzz you must have been creating throughout LA. I think we got something actually to play off your first EP, Nothing Without You.
Oh, cool.
Let's hear actually Nothing Without You. So how was that transition for you to actually be in the studio with your mates, your school friends? You guys are able to do whatever you want, but I can imagine as you sign to a big label, you're probably getting a big producer, you're probably in bigger studios. Was that a natural transition? Did you find it restrictive, freeing? What was that first feeling of recording that EP?
You know, it was something we'd always dreamt of doing. I think having, it makes it challenging when you have, you know, when someone's agreeing to advance you a bunch of money to make something that you've always wanted to make, they very rightfully so have the right mm-hmm. to an opinion on what the heck they're, you know, paying for.
Yeah.
But I think there is an inherent challenge in that, because as an artist, you have ideas that might not always line up with what is necessarily going to make the most money. Although we all want to survive and do well and live comfortably. And
but
everything.
It's about the art for the artist.
Yeah. So that can be a challenge, because there are a lot more opinions in the mix at that point. But it was really fun for us getting to work with David Kahn, an incredible producer, composer. And that's who we worked with on that. And I'm still friends with David. So that's really cool. We live not very far from each other in New York City. So that's I've got to actually see him, but I haven't for a while because of the pandemic and everything. Yeah. So that, it was great though. We recorded that at Avatar Studios, which is now back to being called the Power Station.
Iconic. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was amazing and Joe Barisi was the engineer of those sessions.
I was just going to say, you know, the sound difference, you know, it almost sounds like you put the jazz guitar down and picked up the rock. Was that just because of where you were at personally? Were you being driven that way? What was going on in your life for you to take on such a bigger sound?
You know, it's interesting. So after falling in love with Billy Joel's music and then, it pushed me into things like Queen, and then I completely fell in love with Aerosmith. So from the age of 10, Aerosmith has always been one of my favorite bands. And so the one thing I had in common with Steven Tyler as a 10-year-old child was the fact that I could sing the notes he was singing. But like that,
and you
know,
still can.
So thank you. Like, you know, most of the people on the radio, I couldn't really sing along with as easily as like Steven Tyler and Freddie Mercury. And so I was like, oh man, this is like, I was drawn towards that. But I also never thought at the time that I would be able to do anything hard rock enough along the lines of Aerosmith. And then later, actually, I got into Led Zeppelin through Aerosmith, which is so funny, you know? I didn't anticipate that. It really was, I will say, in all honesty, the rock direction was very much influenced by what I felt that our management and label wanted from us at the time. However, I was excited at the challenge because I had grown up loving Aerosmith. So for me, I was like, hey, let's see. But I did miss a bit of the jazz, which is what I brought back for when I made my own record, Youth is Wasted.
I'm actually glad you did. I mean, you definitely mastered it. You killed it on those tracks.
Thank you.
But I have to say, before we move on to the next topic, brilliant comment that you just made. I mean, you just mentioned two of the most gifted vocalists, the most difficult to be able to do what they do, Freddie Mercury and Steven Tyler. And those were naturally where you felt your comfort zone. And I have to agree, your vocal range, you must have a 6-octave range, maybe more. I mean, incredible.
Thank you.
Absolutely mind-blowing.
Thanks so much.
All right, so let's get into what I'm sure everybody sitting on the edge of their seats wanting to hear about. Your opening for you two, you obviously are blowing the minds of everybody that you're playing in front of, and you get the attention of Bono and the Edge. And not only do they invite you to come perform, you know, as part of their tour, but you actually end up working with them to adapt that Spider-Man song, The Turn of Dark. What was that experience like?
Well, it actually came around the other way, but it wouldn't appear that way because I think the song, the track you're thinking of was released after we opened for them. But, what happened with that is my friend TV Carpio invited, we met her at Molly Malone's when she was doing Across the Universe, and she and Evan Rachel Wood, who's also a dear friend of our, friend of the family's, they would come to Molly Malone's and they were doing Across the Universe with Julie Taymor at the time, and Bono was actually in the film. And so they told Julie Taymor, TV told Julie Taymor about me, and they were trying to cast the Spider-Man musical at that point. And so she brought her to one of my concerts in New York. And that is how I met Julie Taymor and how I got involved in Spider-Man. She ended up calling me last minute to fill in for someone who was originally going to play the role. And I don't know if I should say who, because I don't know if it's out there or whatever, this person, I think scheduling conflict or whatever happened, thankfully for me, because I ended up going to New York only because I wanted to help my friend, my new friend, Julie Taymor. And she said, if you come out here, you'll get to meet Bono and the Edge. And I was like, I'm in. So like, I just flew to New York and sang these songs at this sort of presentation to help, you know, make money from, to get investors involved for the Spider-Man musical. And that's how I became a part of that. I auditioned that week, and then I got the part a couple months later, and I met Bono and Edge that way, became Peter Parker in their musical. And then they said, hey, you want to open for us on our last night? I said, of course I do. Amazing. You kidding me? Yeah.
It's so important. I mean, we talk about this all the time about building relationships in this industry, and, you know, building a relationship is not quick. It's not a fast process, but boy, is it powerful when you can actually do that. And yeah, not only did you become a part of it, you became Spider-Man, and nothing cooler than that.
Yeah.
Here you are starring on Broadway, and I don't want to talk too much about the film and stage stuff because that's all for Rose. So I'm going to pull you back to more of the entering into soundtracks. You know, now you're continue to record as you're performing. You're contributing music to The Tempest, to The Twilight Saga, to Breakdown Part 2. Were these songs that you had already written, or did you write them for scene or upon request?
Twilight was really cool because I was connected with Bill Condon, the director of that film. I didn't end up getting the slot that I was writing for. That went to Feist, understandably, because the thing ended up being incredible. But I was writing to Picture, actually, for their sort of love scene in Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. Funnily enough, with that, I actually wrote, because I had to do it fairly quickly, so I wrote only about 45 seconds worth of material to go as perfectly as I could make it to that scene. And then they said, great, we love it. And they said, just send us the rest of the song when you can. So then I had to record it, write and record the rest of it. So yeah, that New For You song was written direct to Picture, but ended up being used at the end credits instead.
And in your mind, what was the difference between writing to Picture versus writing for your own self? Do you enjoy one over the other?
Yeah, I really enjoy both. And I don't necessarily enjoy one over the other. I think it's lyrics for me take the longest. And in a way, having an image to write to. I mean, I don't know if I've ever said this in an interview because I don't know if I've ever been asked, but I find that I'm most heavily inspired as a lyricist in particular when I'm at the cinema. So when I'm going into a movie theater or even at home, thankfully we've got like a projection screen here, which was installed in our apartment before we arrived. So that's pretty awesome.
Brilliant.
For the pandemic times. But when I get to go to the cinema, I really find that I'm inspired lyrically more than any other time. And so having a final product Picture presented to me with the task to compose music for that portion, I find that it significantly speeds up my lyric writing process. And so I do love that, because otherwise I can spend, honestly, years. It took me, I have a song on my album Youth is Wasted called Up Above the Weather. That song took me 7 years to write. I probably could have written it quicker, but I just let it sit. I had the full structure of the song within probably 10 hours. like amazing. All the piano composition, but then the rest of the song I just let sit for 7 years, and finally I was like, oh, I think this is right. Yeah.
What incredible patience you show as a young person. This just, you blow my mind.
Thanks.
All right. Well, actually, before I move on to my last question and pass the mic to Rose, Milfredo, let's hear a little something from the Twilight Saga. Again, beautiful, beautiful. And you had just mentioned Youth is Wasted, actually. I mean, again, nominated in 6 different categories at the 16th Annual Independent Music Awards. You won Best Song Acoustic, Best Song Rock, Best Album Adult Contemporary. I mean, absolutely mind-blowing. As you're winning these awards, are you worried in your mind you have to make a choice between being a songwriter, musician, or pursuing stage and screen?
You know, I'm just grateful that I have the opportunity to do more than one thing. And that was such a huge honor that day. Because, I mean, the people in those categories, it's all music that I would listen to, which I was just so honored, because it's not always, you know, a lot of awards, you sort of need to sell a certain amount of product in order to even be considered. And the fact that this was all such incredible music that I may have not even heard of, like including my own, if I hadn't made it, you know? So it was like really, really special. But I think I'm grateful that I have the chance and the opportunity to do, to experiment and in a variety of mediums artistically.
So it was never in your mind that you had to choose one or the other. It was just natural. You were going to do it all.
Well, it was in my mind. Thankfully, the world has changed as I see it, because when I picked up a guitar, technically I had started acting first, because I started acting when I was around 8 years old. I didn't pick up the guitar for another 4 years, basically.
Actually, before that, though, didn't you do something, I think at like a year and a half or 2 years, you did a commercial. I think you've been doing it.
That's true. I did. Yeah, I did do like a Huggies commercial when I was like a year old. But when I was 8, I asked my parents. I said, I would like to be an actor. I told them that. Then, and they were like, I don't know about this, because they knew the business was so tough.
Yeah.
But I think at the time, I remember in the mid 90s, it really was not looked upon positively if you were going to act and play music. And I think part of that has been due to, thank goodness, I mean, musical theater has really come back into the popular culture in a way that it hadn't been probably since maybe the late 60s, I'd say. And so thankfully, I think that contributed, because it allows, it's almost like they use this term, this funny term, multi-hyphenate, but it's almost not expected, but it's very much encouraged nowadays. Whereas in the mid 90s, it was discouraged very much to do, if you're going to do one, you better just do one well and not explore the others.
Yeah, it is interesting now, you know, it's like to be that multi-talented, which like you were saying, you know, in the 50s and 60s, it was normal. These icons would be on stage and be in films and be releasing music all as a package. So yeah, thank God that's actually come back into popular culture. And you are you are one of the, you're leading the way with that. And what an inspiration. Kev.
I have a quick question, you know, as someone that is an actor, producer, writer, director, how does it feel switching in between these different genres? Do you have a different mindset? Do you compartmentalize as you go from one to the other?
Yeah, I find it's really helpful. I mean, it's particularly now that I'm involved currently in a musical theater production that utilizes so many aspects of it. I find for me, it's really helpful in communicating with different members of the team. The one area that I have probably the least experience with is dance. And so I'm so grateful when I have a director and or a choreographer that gives me a lot of guidance in that department, because I don't necessarily have a lot of concrete ideas in terms of repetitive movement, like what should be kept in a, as a part of a show, like night after night. But I it's really helpful for me because when I'm singing in a musical, I'm always thinking of the story because of the acting background and maybe even the writing background, even though I have only written songs up until this point now. I always want to respect the writer because as an actor and as a singer, because I'm also a writer. So I think they all kind of feed into one another for me. And I think I learn from one. I bring things from the other that I learn from the other. And
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Incredible. I say we hear one clip from that amazing album, Geronimo, and then let's have Rose jump in.
All right.
I knew I loved you from our first goodbye. I saw my future staring in your eyes. I ran away, I was afraid of something real, something so hard to find. And it took losing you to recognize when your heart is afraid, Geronimo's the way. Geronimo, Geronimo, hey, hey. When your heart is afraid, Geronimo's the way.
Oh my God, nothing more beautiful than that song.
Thank you.
Than my co-host, Rose Ganguza, the godmother of film, the producer of our show. Hello, Rose.
Hey, Jace.
Incredible what you've brought to our stage. Oh my God. I know Reeve is your friend and I've been hogging him. So
no,
he's all yours now.
It was great. So I guess we met when you were like about 12, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I remember the loft on 17th Street very well.
Oh man, me too. I love that place.
It was a great place. You know, going between all of these mediums, on the non-theater side of it, all of the parts you've done in film have been basically non-musical parts. How much are you looking forward to now playing Jeff Buckley and going into a feature piece that is also going to involve your music and doing both things at the same time on film?
I am very excited about it. And I think partially, I was afraid of it for a while. And there definitely is fear associated with it. I think I tend to like to do things that I'm a little bit afraid of because I feel like I'm going to grow the most in those maybe. But I think having had a few acting jobs under my belt that have no music whatsoever makes me feel better about it. Because I think for a while I was afraid that I would be perceived as someone who is, you know, is only doing this part because of my, you know, like I tend to not want to audition for things or even do things that were in which I'm playing a musician.
Yeah.
Just because it seems like, oh, is he really acting or is that just him?
Right.
But when you're playing a real life character, a real life person, and someone as iconic as Jeff Buckley, that is something that's obviously a gift and very exciting to me.
So we figured out yesterday at lunch with your mom that it's been a 10-year journey on Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
We explain a little bit how this all came about and why it took so long to finally get the film up and running.
You know, you probably know a lot more about that world even than I do, but I know with this, I know you do, but with this particular project, in August, it will have been 10 years since I officially got the job. And I'm grateful that it didn't happen when it did, because honestly, I hadn't had the experience that I have now in front of the camera or on stage, even as an actor. And so, and also I think that just life experience, there are certain things that I had not experienced on an emotional level that I think I have a deeper understanding of now in order to properly bring Jeff's story to life on screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it has to do with, scripts, personnel, just finding exactly the right team to tell the story. And it takes time. And I think when you're dealing with someone's real life and wanting to honor them and be as truthful as you can while also making it something that people can understand that had never met him and might not even know. I think that, you know, you're walking a fine line between pleasing the fans and then gaining new fans, and not just preaching to the choir or speaking to the congregation. It's like, let's bring a whole new audience to this person's music.
Exactly. And making it your own. But
yeah,
you know, we talk a lot on this show about film and music, and what a lot of, especially young filmmakers, they fall into the trap of not understanding when they're putting a budget together how expensive music can be to a film. But in this particular case, the major problem was aligning the rights, the music rights,
The
estate rights. And
I didn't know. I didn't actually know that. Yeah.
That was the biggest problem. The music rights were with two different labels, and there was a dispute also with the family rights. And it took all that time to finally put it all together. And you face that with every single artist, and some artists' music are different than others. So with the Jeff Buckley thing, that was a big sticking point, but also not realizing how expensive music can be to a budget. And especially when you're doing a biopic about a musician. Of all of the musician biopics that you've seen in the past and just in the last few years, I mean, which one resonated with you and which one did you feel failed?
I'm trying to think of which ones I have actually seen. I mean, I was blown away by Andra Day in Billie Holiday versus the United States of America. She's a friend of mine too. And I saw, yeah, that was amazing.
That was amazing. It really was.
I'm trying to think of what else I've seen very recently. I mean, hey, I am a fan of Walk Hard. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I am, but that's a totally different thing. But it's very funny and very, but I don't know. Yeah. What else has come out the past few years? I'm trying to think.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously the two Dexter Fletcher pieces of Freddie Mercury.
I haven't seen those yet. I've seen Bohemian Rhapsody. I've seen Bohemian Rhapsody, yes. I mean, and you know I'm a huge Queen fan.
Yeah. Well, I thought you might. Yeah, you would have seen that. On the acting stuff, what was it like just recently working with Ridley Scott?
Oh, my gosh. Really incredible. I mean, I went in quite intimidated, as I think most people probably would be with someone who's had a career that's, I mean, it's crazy because he looks so young, but I think his career has spanned like 60 years. It's almost six. It's insane. Like when you look at his IMDb, but he's just a fantastic artist to work with because what I've said to people when they've asked me, just different actors or people that I've spoken to about it, I find that his direction, and I spoke to Jack Huston, our mutual friend, about this, and he's I see what you mean. I feel like he really finds a way of bypassing the artist's brain,
which
I think is so helpful because he doesn't get you caught up. It's really easy to get caught up in your head. And when you're moving fast the way he likes to work, which I love, you don't have much time to be confused. So, he'll give you just a very simple note that unlocks something. And I love it because I found a deep level of trust from him that he really, really trusts his actors. And he also trusts you to prepare. And so for me, it was great because I prepare. I mean, I'm not in a whole lot of the film, but for the parts that I am in, I prepare it as if I was doing a play.
Right.
By the time I got there, I was ready to do the performance. And that's not always the way it is for film and TV because sometimes you have more time, but usually he only likes to do maybe 2 to 4 takes and that's it. And he does everything at once. He doesn't do multiple setups. It's really awesome. I don't even know how he's structured.
And he's so prolific, even at his age, that he's doing so much product. It's pretty amazing. You as a musician and an actor, I'm sure you appreciate, and it wasn't lost on you, that the lead in that film is Lady Gaga, who has shown herself now to be a wonderful actress. And how was that to see her working as Patricia? You know, I met Patricia Gucci, and when that project first came to me, and this is going back like wow, a long time ago. It was more than 10 years ago. Nobody, you know, Gucci, and again, estate rights, it finally all came together. But at the point where she was really wanting to do this project years ago, it was never possible to do it because it would have, you would have been engaged in a lot of lawsuits. So I'm really happy the story finally came out. But you as a musician and an actor, what were your impressions of Lady Gaga and what she was doing?
You know, Tom Ford actually doesn't appear in any scenes with that character, which I guess would probably make sense, you know.
Of course, yeah.
So I didn't actually meet her because we weren't there at the same time. But it's interesting because she has the opposite trajectory in terms of her balance between the two worlds that I do, because I didn't even know this. But, you know, one reason she's so great at what she's doing is she actually wanted to be an act. She trained to be an actor before she was a musician.
Right.
It's kind of funny. It's like the opposite of me in a way, I guess, somewhat.
Yeah. But I mean, this is really other than the Ryan Murphy stuff that she's done, this is really a big leap for her because, of course, A Star Is Born, she was an obvious choice, just as Barbara Streisand was an obvious choice in the Chris Christopherson version of that story. But, you know, and I think people were really impressed with her in that film. But to do a straight acting role for her now, which is not a Ryan Murphy, was a big leap. And to do it with someone like Ridley is amazing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm really excited to see. I mean, I'm kind of waiting for a second trailer, but maybe they won't have one. Maybe they'll just go straight in.
I think it's going to hit and everybody's going to love it and want to see it. So that's, I mean, it's amazing. So let's go back a bit, you know, when you're little and you're doing snow falling on cedars. And, you know, I always wonder because I've worked with so many child actors, and what was it like for you? Because a lot of child actors don't make the transition well. Was there a point in your early teens where you were thinking of not doing acting, or did that ever enter your mind and just say, well, I'd like to just be a musician and not an actor?
Oh, yes, completely. And I have to, like, obviously, you know my family well, and I have to give full credit on this to my mom. Like,
of course. Without
the thing that you're speaking of with a lot of young actors, unfortunately, I mean, some of it may come directly from them, but I think a lot of it comes from certain outside pressures that are sometimes internal within the family and wanting them to do things that maybe they don't even want to do. And for me, it was like, it was always, you can do this as long as you want to do it. That was what my mom has always said to me. It's like, because she didn't really want me to do it. She did not want me to do it, but she just was like, you know, I'm not going to, if you want to do this, you can do it. But if you want to go play hockey one day and you don't want to go to an audition, then play hockey. And so it was very much me driving that vehicle. And I did decide that I didn't really want to act at all. By the time I was about 16, I really didn't. I just wanted to play music. And so that's what I ended up doing. And I think that's probably a good thing because, I just went completely underground. I guess sometimes, I don't know. There's some people that continue from childhood and go all the way through, and they are, that's a really hard thing to do, I think, like you're saying, because people know you as a child. For me, I never really had the chance to be particularly known as a child actor. So it probably was a little easier for me in that way.
Yeah. Zane was more, I guess, visible at that point, right?
Oh, very much. Yeah. Yeah. Because I, funnily enough, like I was about to quit acting even earlier than that, right at the age of 14, because I was, it sounds like a joke, but I felt like, man, am I ever going to get a job? Because the first really big job I got was Snow Falling on Cedars. And at that point, it had been 40% of my life that I had been acting, because I started when I was 8. So it sounds funny to quit when you're 14, but I was kind of like, man, this is too hard. Then I got that job. And by then I was kind of already so focused on music that I knew that I wasn't particularly interested in doing any other acting jobs after that.
Yeah. No, and I think you were very right to give credit to your mom, because other than the fact that she's a force of nature, but an incredibly kind and an intelligent person, a lot of child actors lose their way because of the parents and because of their obsession with just, you know, pushing their children into something that they may or may not So she was very smart to just leave that to you, because you can't force a child ultimately into doing this if they don't want to do it. And the kids that do succeed are the ones that just really like it or are having fun with it and, you know, think it's cool and just go for it, you know? So yeah. I think that was very, very important for you.
And I think it helped me to stay away from other trappings like substance type stuff because...
Yeah. I mean, I saw it with Antonio, you know, full disclosure. Reeve did my son Antonio's first movie ever, which was a short called Puberty. And I remember you guys sitting on a stoop on 12th Street in the film. But I always thought that that obsession that he had from such an early age with making movies kept him out of trouble, you know? And right. I think the same with you. I mean, being involved in music and acting and everything else is the best solution. And when parents say to me, how do you make sure your kids don't get into trouble or don't go in the wrong direction? I just said, from an early age, you're going to know exactly what their love is and what interests them and just keep reinforcing that, you know, and go with the flow, you know? So when you did Hadestown, the first production of that was in London, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
The first one actually that I was involved in was in Edmonton. But it was it's changed so much that you're correct in that they've all changed so much, but our set, the scenic design was pretty much finalized in London. So the look of the show from London looks very similar.
Yeah.
But then there were some major character changes that happened, whereas my character used to be a tough guy, kind of like a James Dean type is what they wanted.
Yeah.
But James Dean meets John Lennon is kind of what they wanted. And
right.
I like to think that now he's more like Brian Wilson, which is just different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What was the difference between performing on a UK stage as opposed to Broadway? And I was getting to the point where you said in that recent interview I just read yesterday that every time you perform, you give it as an audition.
Yeah.
And years ago, I'd asked Jerry Orbach when we started doing Chicago, I said, how do you do this every night? You know, you're doing the same thing over and over and over again, 8 times a week. And he said, for me, it's like telling a joke to a different person every time. And every time I tell the joke, I either embellish it or I add something on or I leave stuff out. So, and when you are backstage or you're seeing this from a different perspective every night on Broadway, you do notice that not every performance every single night is the same. How do you approach that? And do you feed off of the audience? And what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I very much do. And I think of it almost like as a medical practice in a way. It's kind of like a surgeon, because we kind of are responsible for people's, you know, emotion, responsible somewhat to keep them safe and lead them on sort of a meditative journey, I guess it feels like. And so you have to take, I don't know. That's what it feels like that to me, because with a medical practice, you have the job and you're in charge and in control, but they still call it a practice. And I guess I feel that way about acting, but I think it's when you have a creative team that really cares and they want to, you know, they're involved. It's with a long running show. It can be tricky sometimes, because when you're in the pilot seat for hundreds of shows and, you know, the creative team comes around maybe every 30 or 40 shows, you naturally sort of use the audience to think like, is this working? Like, you use the feedback of the audience, but sometimes that's not the right thing to do. I've learned it depends. It's hard. Honestly, I shouldn't even say I've learned it. I just know that there are times when there are things that feel really right to me with the audience that we will then get notes about from the creative team to bring back to something that we used to do. And so you kind of have to figure, it's kind of a balance, and I'm not really sure, because I can't fully get outside of my body to watch the show while I'm doing it, obviously.
Of course.
But yeah, it is, it's interesting. You want to use the audience, but I definitely never want it to move into farce or melodrama territory. You want to make sure everything's very true. And even if you can get a good laugh out of a silly gag, I always want to make sure that it makes sense with the story.
Yeah, that's great, Reeve. It was so great talking to you. And I'm going to hand this back to Jason.
You too.
I love that. I love that last comment. And obviously, I mean, that has to draw on your live performances as a musician. So it's just interesting how your journey has just given you all of these tools to be the best at stage, at screen, at composition. Yeah, Reeve, what an incredible delight and joy to have you on the show to experience just a small piece of this incredible journey. And it's just the beginning. Just the beginning of what I know you're going to accomplish. Congratulations with everything.
Hi, Reeve. Milfredo here. Hey, man, I'm just so jealous. And I really have. You made such a seamless transition, like with film and music. Just you talking about the 90s. Speaking from my own experience, we got offered a part in a Judge Dredd, the Sly Stallone. And everybody, bar none, said to us, do not do it. It's a no-no. Musicians do not do film.
Right.
Everybody, management, everyone. And it was just like, someone please say we can. And it was like, no, don't do it. You know, you'll just lose all your credibility, you know, either way or. And so my hat is off to you big time. You did it so well. You made it cool. You stayed cool, mate. And big time, you know. Big reps to you, man. Well done.
Thanks so much. I mean, it's just the times we're living in, I'm grateful for. I mean, in the same way, you think about the one thing that we trade off for that is I remember social media being very against it at first because I'm like, Led Zeppelin wouldn't do this.
Honestly, Reeve, I don't care what day, what decade, you know, where the world's at. No matter when you came about, you would have been a master at this and broken down the walls. And yeah, like I said, I can't wait to see what you do. I know you and Rose have some things cooking in the background, even for the future. Yeah, man, just hats off. And anytime you want to come back and visit us, please know that there's a warm seat waiting for you.
Thank you so much, Jason. Yeah, this has been so great. I would love to.
Amazing. And I know you're off to do rehearsals. You're doing 8 shows a week. Keep it up. Please stay safe out there and keep people entertained like you do.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Reeve. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Milfredo and Kevin. Oh my God, that was so much fun.
Sync opportunities, sync opportunities.
Oh my God. All right, welcome to the Sync Report. We're doing it. We're live. We're ready. And I have to say, welcome, Susie Quattro. I can't believe you're in the room tonight. I'm so excited. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am on fire, thanks to you, woman. You are just making me look like a superstar from Move Me No Mountain. I believe we have 2 of your songs in that film. And now to know that you've walked away with it for Colin's Tier 3 NFT. The song that you submitted is incredible. So, and I see we have like all these new people joining the room, and I can only imagine that's between you and Colin posting and sharing that you're going to be here. So let me do this, Susie. Let me introduce you to the team. First, I just want to say hello to the woman I've probably been driving the most crazy last couple of weeks. Jody, how are you today? Are your fingers broken from all the mouse and movements we've been doing with the graphics?
No, not so bad.
Not so bad. I don't know. You've been killing it. You've been absolutely creating, you know, the poster, which we're going to launch pretty soon for the NFT gathering in Dublin. Moving right along. Love you, Jody. Dawn, let's say a quick hello to Dawn, who runs the music department. Obviously, doing a great job with our Sunday sync sessions. The music supervisor for Move Me No Mountain, and has just been working like a dog like the rest of the team. How you doing, woman?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited. And Susie, oh my gosh, like you almost had me in tears. I remember the first time Jason and I got on a Zoom with you. I literally had to like pinch myself. Like, what is happening right now? So, and you are just an amazing person.
Thank you.
I just have to say, it's been great to get to know you, and you're wonderful. And I'm so excited that with your song, I can't believe it. When Jason sent it over, I was like, well, of course I can believe it. The bass was killing me. So it's just wonderful.
Lovely. Excellent. All right, moving on. Let's get into the man who does all the Foley, but not just the Foley. Oh my God, what he's been doing for us, slaving away, creating music. Actually, he has a song that's been submitted and been selected for tonight. And the music that's going behind some of these fun little videos that we're doing with my Zavatar on social media. He's just a gem, and I'm so glad he's part of the team. Phil Mason, how are you tonight?
Hey, Jason, I'm fine, thank you. I've had a bath this week, even though I didn't need it. I got a clean shirt on and shaved because I knew Susie was going to be here and she can't see it, so it's totally wasted.
How funny, I showered tonight too just because
no
Susie
way.
Was
good.
And we're not even in the same room with her, but I'm like, oh my God, I got to shower.
Yeah, I'm all good, buddy. Great to see you, Susie. Hi, team and everyone. Good to be here. It's going to be a great show.
That makes me laugh.
Thanks, Susie.
My daddy's I've had a bath this week, whether I need it or not. I think it's an old-fashioned thing. You had a bath once a week, didn't you?
Well, that's the Brits. The Brits, they don't like to bathe for some reason. I don't know what's going on. But that's
we don't need to.
Yeah, they do, you dirty bastards, you. Oh, okay. All right. So talking about the Brits and my queen, and if it wasn't for this woman, we wouldn't have Susie anywhere in our atmosphere. Paula Flack, say hello.
Hello. I'm slightly reeling from your comment about us Brits not bathing. I'll just let you know, in summer, sometimes I will shower 2 to 3 times a day. Thank you very much.
Paula, did you say reeling or reeking?
Oh, for God's sake.
Sorry, I couldn't help it.
Yeah, reeking.
You better be careful, Susie. You're in the UK.
We know each other a long time.
They can get to you. They can't get to us.
Hopefully, Susie and I are going to be working together.
Oh, my God. I've been hearing rumors. And I think
I'm
it's
very
genius.
Excited.
Oh, my God. Yes. Well, we know. Yeah, I know you're spinning her in a new direction, but she's obviously been, you know, dabbling in it. So maybe you'll let that cat out of the bag soon and tell everybody what's happening.
I hope we can. Yeah.
So exciting. Well, Paula, I adore you. Everything that you're doing, from the marketing, the social media, producing these shows, you are just incredible. Let's just stop. Let's stop. Let's take a breath. Everybody, say hello to Colin O'Donoghue. Hi, Colin.
Hello, hello. Yo, yo.
Hello, hello.
Hey, everybody.
How are you feeling, Colin?
Hi, Colin.
How are you guys? I'm good. Hi, nice to meet you. Yeah, I'm good. I'm a little bit wiped out. Yeah, but I'm okay. I'm good.
I'm amazing. I know you just came through the other end of COVID, but you're still feeling the effects.
Been there, done that.
And for you to be here tonight with us is absolutely mind-blowing that you made this commitment to your fans, to your coworkers, and to this project that we're launching with you. Thank you, Colin. I just, you know, you just, your professionalism, your skills, your talent, it just continually, you blow me away, man. All right. Excellent. This is so much fun. We're going to play a track now from our own Phil Mason. It's a track that I fell in love with, and I'm so glad it was selected. Let's go ahead and hear his track.
There's a time and a place to dance just how you wish. You should see how I move.
All right, that track was Phil's. Phil, do you want to give us a little hello and some background, and then we're going to put the guys in the spotlight to weigh in what they thought.
I'm scared now. Yeah, I just remember. I remember this track. This track is 10 years old now, and I sent it to you. It kind of is demo at the moment, but I sent it to you because I remembered it had this line in it. Oh, you should see how I move, and then it came, bang, sort of flying into that part, and I thought that would be cool to dance to. So it'd be interesting to see what you guys thought to it. But obviously, we'd love to, you know, do a full proper master on this. But yeah, there it is. I think it still works as a good toe tapper. But yeah, interesting to see what you're saying, whether Colin thinks he could dance to it. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Hey, it got me dancing, Phil. All right, let's see what the rest of the guys have to say. Milfredo, why don't you start off, huh?
Well, this has got some attitude, Phil. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting you say it's 10 years old because the first thing that came into my head was dubstep, maybe trap now if you updated it a little bit. Mm. But yeah, yeah. Mm. But it's got that. No, it's good and it's heavy. It moves. I'd like to have more vocal hits in it. I know you said it's 10 years old, but just from an update point of view, this is me. It almost gets too comfortable with itself, and there's so many like nasty noises in there. We should not be comfortable with that track. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like they're doing it. Oh, they're still doing it. And then it's almost like I want them to come out and come back in again. But do you know what I can hear on it? Like a little, like a skank. I definitely can hear that. And then like I don't know, maybe some ragga vocals on there or something, but I hear a skank in there and that might update it a little bit because it's got a bit of dubstep about it and I think you could update it with that. Yeah, and that would bring on that different, or as my old label manager, you say, can we have a bit more ragga, please? That was about it. but do you know what I'm saying? I could feel this skank to it. I really can. And then when that drops out, bang, this vocal comes back in. But yeah, it's dirty. It's got loads of attitude. And that's what, you know, Kevin wanted. So I can completely understand why you dragged that out and blew the dust off. Because yeah, it's got attitude and volume.
Is skank a British term, Milfredo? Because it means something different here.
A dirty skank is a completely different thing in my library, trust me.
If you don't know ska, then you might be thinking that's something else.
Lisa, it's like the chink in ska, you know, chink, 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 that's a dirty skank.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
All right, yeah, all right, no worries. Thank you.
Hey, sometimes you need it a little dirty.
Yeah.
You need a little gutter. That makes a hit sometimes. And Phil, I got to tell you, that had some skank in it. That had some fire in it. It hit hard. It hit hard.
Cheers, guys. I think we should rename it The Skank.
Well, you got to get it first, yeah. Baby. You got to put the skank in first. All right, Danny, what do you think?
Yes, yeah, skanking, man. The skank mix.
Yes, we need the skank mix. But do you think, is this something that you would try to tackle?
Again, you know.
Got to be honest at this point.
It's already, see, all these tracks already feel like remixes. You know what I'm saying? So for me, like, what I listen more for are the vocals, because that's what's going to set me off if I'm going to do like a proper remix. So aside from what I personally think of the track, it's already kind of feels like it's gone down that road. So, I mean, again, until I got the files in front of me and I start soloing shit, I really never know what I'm going to do. I just get a feeling. You know, that one felt like it was the way it wanted to be already. That's pretty much the one thing all these have had in common so far to me.
All right, so not to spend too much more time, Colin, I'd love your thoughts. You know, keeping in mind, this is the man that does our Foley, so be kind.
Yeah. No, it was great. I wasn't expecting it, and I came in hard, as, you know, Alfredo pointed out. It's sort of, I wasn't expecting it. It gave me a slap across the face. Straight away. No, I think it's great. I think it's great, Phil. I mean, again, it's sort of kind of up to Milfredo and Danny, I guess, to see how they would approach things. I really liked how hard it came in. You know, it felt like it was on the right track.
Brilliant. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Danny. Milfredo. Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Phil. That's great. All right, moving on. I think we're going to move on to OG Mason now. Is that right, Don?
Sure, let's do it.
So this is OG Mason. I can take your pain away. OG, oh wow, I dig it. OG is actually a legacy. We've had him on stage before. I remember the first track I heard from you, Blown Away With, and wondering why I'm working with your dad. Say hello, OG.
Yo, man, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. You killed it with that track. What was that about?
Thank you, bro. Yeah, I did that a while back, actually. I was just going for like a deep, dark house kind of vibe. And yeah, just ended up playing with some cool synth sounds. And just went from there. I didn't realize you were actually playing one of the songs today. My dad just messaged me. So yeah, it's quite a shock, but thank you for playing that, man.
Yeah, yes. Well, that's the thing. These things, you know, the team, we're back, you know, behind the scenes laboring over what to pick. So I'm glad you were here for this, but now we're going to torture you. I see Vinx is lighting up. Let's start with Vinx.
Man, first off, you got to like do some NFT, making some money for Phil Merson's sperm, because this is his kid, right? Dude, you guys got to figure this out, because I want to buy some of that shit he's spilling all over the planet.
Oscar, is that the kind of feedback you were hoping for on that song, son?
Yeah, well, that's my side hustle, so it's a good thing you asked.
Yeah, right. Good one, boy.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I love nothing like a bit of good sperm combo on this stage. I love it. All right, before we get to Milfredo, let's hear what Kev has to say.
Yeah, you know, I love this song from the start. Phil, I think you know that.
Was this your choice,
Kev? This is one of my choices. That's right.
Yeah.
And OG, I think you know that too. I called you the OG. What does that make you feel? OGG.
Super OG, yeah.
He's the old bitch.
The original.
The original. Yeah, but, you know, this song is, you know, it has a classic feel to it, you know, that it could be kind of timeless. And so, you know, this one, for sure, I have loved this song from the first time I heard it. And so no matter which way it goes, and I think I said this from the start, I definitely want it for our show, The Sync Report. There's so many places for The Sync Report. But no matter which way it goes, this song has to stick close to us.
Yes, sir. It's in the bag.
Milfredo, what do you think? Is this something remixable, or is it kind of like untouchable?
Well, it's kind of there, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, fair play, OG. I know you said you did it a while ago, but most of those sounds are just on point still, aren't they? That dark house feel. But it's written to genre. I think to mess with it would be would kind of diss what he's done, if I'm honest. But the only, do you know the, I don't know if you remember Scream's In For The Kill, the Ravy Davey remix. Do you know that track or not?
Yeah,
that bass line is just, and that's the, I think to try and do like a beats mix of this would kind of, I don't know whether it would do it, just you could probably like chew on some kind of D&B break in there, but I'd do a real stripped back version and then maybe like double up the beats at the end from a remix point of view, and it would be awesome, man. What I did want to know, that vocal, is there more to that vocal? Is it a sample? What, where?
No, yeah, so that's a sample from a girl in the US called Cara. I got it from Splice. She does a few little hooks here and there.
Yeah.
I just got that one. I don't think there's more to it. I think it's literally just that, but hence why it's kind of repetitive. Otherwise, I would have used a bit more than just...
Yeah. But I mean, you could easily do it yourself, I think, or we could do it or whatever, it, you know. But do you know what I saw? Yeah. Like a mad breakdown and then this extension of whatever that what's she saying? I Can Save Me or whatever it was. But an extension of that, like maybe like a whole kind of 16 bar verse, and then it's gone again and we're back into that sample with it coming back in. But, you know, with that real...
I'd be happy to put some vocals on there.
There you go. There she is. There she is, right there. Yeah, that's exactly it, Lisa. Yeah. And it would just expand it. You know, it's just, great. And then maybe it comes back in with that little doubled up drum and bass mix. I don't know. But I'd strip it right back, I think, and with that bass, get Lisa doing her dulcet tones on it. And then, I can hear a stripped back mix. I don't think I'd beat it up. I really don't. I just think it's great as it is. It's a great track, mate. So well done.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you, everyone else, for the kind words as well. Appreciate all of you.
Well done, son.
OG, we love having you on the stage, man. I hope you'll keep sending music because you are really talented, my friend.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah, of course. I'd love to. Got a load of things that I've been doing in the background.
Come on, baby. Bring it on.
Well done, son. Proud of you, buddy.
Cheers, bro. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, OG. And I mean, I would compliment you, Phil, but all you did was get laid.
Yeah,
so.
that was it. We had very
little. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah,
you old romantic, yeah. Jason, ain't you?
All right, let's get back to the music, right, Don? Who's next?
We have Summer Bingham on the stage already, and her song, Feeling This, and I'm going to let you tell her how to pronounce her band name, but this will be our final one tonight from our list. So thank you all for being here.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Minner Pulser. I don't know. She'll tell, let her tell us. Summer, you tell us, but let's hear the song first.
You got it.
Actually been so excited about a song since I heard Hola, Hola, Hola. That was banging, Summer. All right, tell me, how do I pronounce your band name?
Okay, so remember when it was like kind of cool to not have vowels? Our band was called Minor Pleasure, but we took out all the vowels and that just caused so much confusion.
Oh, very clever. Very clever. Yes, I see it now. Yes. Oh, I feel very stupid. And, you know, for a guy that tries to read and pretend like he is, you know, somewhat knowledgeable, I feel embarrassed. That's a brilliant name. Thank you, Summer. Why don't you introduce yourself again to our audience? Tell us about that track.
Sure thing. So I'm a producer based in Brooklyn, but I'm from Florida, which I don't always tell everybody about. Because
Brooklyn, I'm coming to Dumbo.
Florida. No, pass.
Florida.
Well, Miami. It's not really Florida. So it's another country, really.
Yeah, South Beach is quite
sexy. Oh, no, South Beach is different. I'm talking about, like, Florida. Like, deep Florida, do not recommend. But anyway.
Thank you, Summer. I'm with you.
Yeah,
baby.
That's fair, you know. Anyhow, I got out. I escaped. I produced with my friend Emily. She helped craft this track. Lots of oohs and ohs and cowbell. And we just want to do something super fun, like something you want to dance to with your buddies, you know.
Oh, and you had me grooving, woman. Oh, wow. All right, let's torture you now with some abuse. Milfredo, what do you think about that track?
Oh, I loved it, man. Well, and I've said this before, like, it's the track's got a real sense of humor, but it is a serious track, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? I just, like, it makes me smile. When that groove started at the start, it was like almost like a, I don't know, like a Sympathy for the Devil sort of groove. And there is a real groove going on in there. There really is. But sometimes I think I forget to think of tracks other than releases, because that's my background, but like for a sync or something, it's got that all over it, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Imagine it on an advert or for TV. It's just that's just so much going on, but everything just clicks in the right place where it should. It could, like a track with that much going on, like as you said, that percussion, that dirty cowbell, it could just all like just be a right mashup, but it doesn't. Everything's got its own space, and the mix is good on it as well. You haven't clashed it. It's almost like an old school mix. I can hear it, like, you know, I'll put that at 10 o'clock, I'll put that at 2 o'clock, but that's the way you've spaced it out. And yeah, great track. I don't think Ola Ola is
on the
no,
same
Jason No.
Wow. No. Wow.
I think you're on.
Oh my God. Well, this is why I defer to you, my friend.
No, no. It's a great track. That is. I really like it. I hear it as a, like I say, an advertising track. In its current format, I couldn't imagine it as a release. Do you know what I mean? I just think, but it could.
Oh, an ad campaign.
Yeah,
for sure.
But, I mean, it could quite easily be put into a format that you could release it.
Incredible. Vinx, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, you know, we've been wrestling with this pandemic for so long, but I got the vision and I got the feeling that for the first time, this dude took his mask off and he was just drooling all low and close to the ear the whole time. It was like, it has a kind of personality to it. It's just, it was cracking me up the whole time I was listening to it. So I enjoyed it. Thank you for the humorous lift. I loved it. Thank you.
Fantastic. Kev, do you want to wind this one up?
Yeah, that was one of the songs I picked, actually. Yeah.
Of course. You got good ears, my friend.
Yeah, because it is fun. And it is, you know, that's a song that picks you up, but it's serious at the same time. And it does accomplish what Milfredo said, which is there's a lot going on, but a lot of things in all the right places. So this one, Summer, it feels like summer. A Miami summer, not a deep South Florida summer. So I love it. I love that one.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I'm going to be so bold, Summer. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think no matter what happens with that track, we want it for the sync report.
No doubt.
Done.
Excellent. Oh, Summer, you're an angel.
Thank you so much to our amazingly talented guests for joining us on today's show. And to you, our listeners, for spending your time listening to us and being with us. The Sync Report cast will be back in a week with your hosts, myself, Colin O'Donoghue, Rose Ganguza, and Jason P. Rothberg. Until next time, take care and be kind.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next week.